online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog, the podcast. It's the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And hopefully by the end of today's show, we'll give you something that you can take away to help your company's bottom line. I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios. And today we're going to be talking about mobile marketing. And around the table, we have Mr. Paul Bordeaux.
Hello, how you guys doing?
How you doing? You're our senior software engineer.
That's what they tell me. Yep.
All right. We also have Jonathan Rademacher. He's our executive vice president of application development. You need a shorter title, my friend.
I'll work on it.
Okay. And Chuck Tomanek is also here too. He's our senior systems analyst.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
Paul, we're going to start with you today. A while back here at Sundog, you gave a presentation on mobile marketing, and it was so good, we wanted to turn it into a podcast. So we're going to start with you. Can you give us an overview of what you see as the current state of mobile marketing and where you see it going in the near future?
Well, right now, mobile marketing is exploding into the marketplace. 2010 really is going to be the year of the mobile. The iPhone explosion that happened a few years back, the Android explosion that's happening right now, all this is fueling more and more phones that are capable of receiving message and brand across mobile devices, and people are really getting into it a lot more. Now, I know that other areas of the world have been into mobile marketing for several years now. We can take our steps from Europe, Africa, all the different places that are really heavily into mobile marketing, and we've seen what works really well with them and what doesn't work well with them, and we're starting to port them over into the United States-based customers. So it's going to be an exciting year here for mobile, I think.
I also think it's interesting, as you mentioned, Africa and some of the other countries where this may be their first interaction with the web.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, the first time they're looking at Facebook or some of the other social networks, it's through a mobile phone.
Yep, there's more mobile connections in some of the third world countries than there are landlines and internet connections. So that really is how they're connecting to the world, is through the mobile devices.
What do you see as the challenges going forward, especially, let's just put the two giants out front, Apple versus Android? Are there challenges for marketing on one versus another, or can you develop something that's pretty much platform agnostic?
Well, the only way you can really develop platform agnostic is to develop for the mobile web. Both iPhone and Android have separate SDKs, separate development engines, and Apple's pretty good about not letting you develop something for one that can be used across all of them. So really, when we look at multi-platform applications, it's going to be across the mobile web.
And that's really rendering in a smaller browser. So when we're building a website, it's not really making it specific for another handset, but it's making that user interface specific because you're dealing with much smaller real estate.
Right. A lot more condensed room to put the information out there.
The other piece to consider is there's a lot of folks don't have browsers on their phones. I mean, we're still, SMS is a huge part of this, texting. Most everyone has text now on their phones. I think that's a fairly easy way to do mobile marketing.
Yep, that is by far the largest marketing platform out there for mobile right now, is SMS marketing, text marketing. Up to 95% of the U.S.-based subscribers right now have text capability on their phone, whereas you're looking at between 5 and 10% of the U.S. subscribers who have the ability to, it's a smartphone, so they don't, there's a lot more phones out there that can take text than there are smartphones, so really that's the big one.
What are the percentages now? I mean, what percentage of the market is smartphones?
Anywhere between 5 and 10%, depending
that's
on what
it?
You define as the market.
Wow, that's surprising. It. I guess, the company we keep around here is not a good representative of the country, I guess.
A very poor barometer, but I think it's really important when we look at a mobile marketing strategy, we don't exclude anyone. And you start with text. We've been talking a lot about that recently as far as how do we figure out who our market is. When we engage a new client and they want to do a mobile marketing strategy, first of all, we have to figure out what their user base is. And part of that is everyone can receive text, so start with some sort of interaction that involves text. Then we can take a look at, based on the response text or the incoming text, depending on the marketing strategy, what handset they're on, if they do have mobile web access, if they've got a camera on there, there's a tremendous amount of data that's provided that we can dissect what their user base is and decide, hey, maybe we should have an iPhone app, or maybe we should have a platform agnostic web site, web interaction, or we should just do everything through text. We've got a number of options, but the point is that handset is always with them. And Paul's got some great stats on that. I think he mentioned before, but how far is typically your handset away from you?
No more than 3 feet at any given point of the day. Whether you're awake, you're asleep, your handset's almost always right within arm's reach of you. So that's something that you don't have for television or newspaper or internet. You just don't have that proximity to the user at all times like we do across mobile devices.
Now, we're still going to see the proliferation of these mobile handsets that have the web on them. True, we haven't hit critical mass yet. It takes a while for people to get on. But seeing things like I saw recently a Hulu-focused app for Android where $9.99, you get every thing that's available on Hulu. I think that those are going to be very compelling arguments.
Right. Now, one thing I do want to say, you asked how many people were on smartphones. Mm-hmm. I threw out 10% and you were surprised.
Yeah.
One thing that you need to keep in mind is that the line between regular phone and smartphone is blurring right now. When I think of smartphone, I think of something that like is a 3G phone. It requires some type of constant data access in order to work. So you have your iPhone, you have your Android phones, you have your Blackberries. Mm-hmm. Those are the smartphones. But there's a generation of phones right now which are the most popular that are in between a regular phone. Yeah, exactly.
You pulled out the LG Dare is what I've got.
Yep, the Dare, the LG NV Touch, the NV3, they're all in between that regular phone and smartphone, and they all have capabilities that mimic smartphones, except mm-hmm. you can't put applications on them as easily. That's only the limitation that they have there.
Yeah, yeah. With mine, I can basically rent applications.
Yep.
It's a monthly fee.
So what about other limitations, like if we look at things like bandwidth? Like we talk about New York City, San Francisco having all these issues with bandwidth already because of the iPhone, is introducing large-scale ads, iAds, for example. I mean, what's that going to do to the networks? And then there's also texting. I mean, almost everyone has text, but how many of them have unlimited free?
Most of them are aiming that way. Where the carriers are starting to make their money is no longer on minutes or subscribers. It's on data plans. And so the amount of megabytes they're pushing from their carrier to your phone, that's how they're making their money. For texting, almost all new plans that are out there right now have some type of unlimited text or a number, you know, 250 to 500 per month that they don't actually intend people to hit. It's just supposed to be a bucket that they fall into. So texting's fairly easy on that realm. The nice part, and you talked about bandwidth across the carrier too, and that really is an issue right now. If you go to San Francisco and you have your iPhone out there, they're on AT&T. AT&T's structure, while it's a very, very fast network, doesn't have the bandwidth to support all the data that's being streamed across it right now. So you're getting dropped calls, dropped applications, losing text, that type of stuff. And when you start losing text, that's when you know that it really is a problem, because texts aren't sent across in the standard way. They're sent across in the downtime. So if there's no downtime, if there's no open area on the bandwidth, texts simply don't get sent out. So that's really a key. When you see that happening, you know that the network is way too saturated.
Are there reports on that have happened recently?
Oh, yeah. Yep. You can go out to YouTube, in fact, and they did some comparisons between the Nexus One, which was on T-Mobile, mm-hmm. and the iPhone, which was on AT&T, and they were in downtown San Francisco, and they were doing side-by-side phone calls and side-by-side texts. And the Nexus One, while it still had some drops, it mostly went through, and the AT&T was just a brick at that point. It wasn't doing anything.
So. And the important part is, obviously, it's a network dependency versus a phone dependency most of the time.
Oh, absolutely. And that, yeah, the networks don't have... This iPhone and Android explosion we like to talk about, that came so fast that the networks weren't prepared to handle the always-on bandwidth that these phones are requiring. That's one thing we've seen with other carriers now, is that they're starting to step up their networks, they're creating the new 4G networks, they're putting more bandwidth into it, and that's really to address this problem of we have phones, but we don't have the data usage right now.
So I think the interesting thing, as we loop back, we talk about different handset capabilities. It's a more complex marketing strategy, but it's more of the same. It seems, you know, Sundog, we do email marketing, we do websites, we do mobile, we do social, but it's almost a luxury today with email and with the web, because we've got a couple browsers, but it's a slight tweak to make it work in the various browsers. Email, there are different clients that receive email, but you know, it's a smaller pool that we really have to test for. When we get into this mobile marketing piece, we really have to dissect, again, who that broad base is we're trying to get to.
There is no standard. I mean, if you want to send out a multimedia message, so you want to send out a picture message to somebody, take into account screen size. You can look it up right now. There's over 300 different screen sizes that are actively in use right now. And you can narrow it down to your 20 most common, but really that's still 20 screen sizes you have to adjust for. And even among the new phones coming out, every phone, you know, you have the iPhone, you have the Droid, you have the Droid Incredible. All of them have slightly different aspect ratios on their screens. And so you have to take that into account when you're designing multimedia campaigns.
So very interesting along that same side, just a bit of a tangent, but on the iPhone, I heard rumor that they're going to have a new ratio on the new iPhone. The rumor is it's going to be, it was like 900 by 600, but the point was that it was the aspect ratio was the same as a typical web browser. So trying to have it so you can scale that down easier. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I hadn't heard that, but that would actually, and that would make it a lot easier to develop for the mobile web if you're taking standard web pages and shrinking them down.
So that's what I heard. Now, I mean, obviously that's all off of the left iPhone in the bar incident that happened about a week ago, where a new iPhone prototype was leaked out, left at a bar, and now Apple's getting it back. But the rumors are that this new aspect ratio potentially would make it easier for developing for the mobile web and really blur those lines, which would be very helpful.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, as these phones get more and more powerful, they can mock the current systems that we have better and better.
I think we have to do that. The UI is very critical. So it's interesting. It's much more of an information architecture exercise than it is anything else to really make that small real estate usable. You know, if you go to ESPN.com right now from a mobile browser, you're going to get much different experience. And really that's customized around a very small bit of real estate that you can work from.
Yep. That's one thing that I see as some mistakes that people make when they're trying to mobilize their website is they take the website they've designed for the web, you know, for the internet, and they're just going to try to shrink it down or try to display it in a browser. And there are some problems with that, because first of all, if you're going to a website on your mobile phone, it's usually for a different reason than if you're going to a website on your computer. You know, if you're going to something on the mobile phone, it's because you want some type of immediate action right now. Maybe I want to immediately see the scores, or I immediately want to buy tickets, or something along those lines. Whereas if you're going on the internet, there's a lot more reasons that you could be looking at, you know, something further down the road that's not as immediate. So when you design a mobile website, not only do you have to take into account the real estate, you also have to take into account the user interface. You know, there's no mouse, there's no hover, you can't use any of those tricks we do on the internet. And you have to take into account the purpose of the person, of why they're actually going there.
I think that's very important as we talk about the handset not being more than 3 feet away from you. Thinking about how you actually use your phone, and I'm trying to force myself to always use my phone for everything, just to get embraced in that experience. But, you know, talking a little bit about mobile marketing, what does that mean? You know, instead of me researching a new car purchase or a dishwasher or something, I'm looking for pizza.
Exactly.
You know, that's a big difference. I'm looking for movie tickets. I'm at a sporting event, and I want the guy walking around with the beer thing to find me, right?
I want that a lot, actually.
Is there an app for that?
You know, we've talked about that, actually. And that takes into account both on the mobile web and the mobile apps, but also in getting back to the SMS marketing versus email marketing. If you're doing an email marketing campaign, you might be emailing people with information, perhaps, you know, here's the new car lineup coming in April, and here's links that you can go out and look at these new cars and all that fun stuff. If you're doing SMS marketing, you have to approach it with the same idea as when you are looking at with the web. Whatever you're going to send out to that consumer, it has to be something that's based in the immediacy, because they don't want something on their phone that they're not going to be able to take action on for 6 months. So, you know, email them the lunch coupons, email them a link that you can click to call for whatever base you're trying to advertise.
So I think things like Yelp, things like the review sites, you know, if I'm out on a business trip, I pull up my mobile because I want to find out where a close restaurant is or coffee shop, and it's more difficult than you'd think. I mean, Google's got a nice little app, and these other pieces have a nice little app, but that targeted marketing, knowing where the person is and what they're looking for,
that's huge.
Does it make more sense for companies to maybe look at developing specific apps for their businesses as opposed to designing their websites to run on mobile browsers?
Depends on the company and what they're trying to achieve. I know it's kind of a easy out answer there, but really, There is no one strategy that you can recommend for a business when approaching mobile, because every business we have to look at and say, well, what are your objectives here? Do you Are you trying to drive people to a certain location? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to provide information to people? What do you need to do?
I guess I was going back to what Jay was talking about. When people pull out their mobile browser, they're looking for some sort of a, or maybe it was you, Paul, I'm sorry,
yep.
Looking for that immediate feedback. So, you know, maybe a business has good analytic data on when people visit their website, what are they going there for? Maybe they can concentrate on those results, apply that to a mobile app.
I think there's a ton of different pieces to that, and I think mobile marketing is a huge part of that because it's advertising. So not even so much that you have a web presence that mimics your current one, or if you have an app. You have to think about the time it takes for me to actually get to that. My first piece is I pick up my phone. I've got Google Voice on it, basically, where I can just speak to it and say pizza, mm-hmm. and it pops up the local pizza places. I don't even want to go to that pizza website. I have no interest in it. Mm-hmm. I want to know which ones are closest. I want to know the user reviews, which are right in there. And I also want to know which one's going to give me a deal.
Yep.
The app piece is very interesting, but you have to look at the user behavior. Why do I want an app? It's more of a long-term engagement. We've looked at a lot of apps for, say, sporting events where it's real-time feeds of the player stats, or if you're at a hockey game, seeing the real-time stats around all the players. Those are good app alternatives. Mm-hmm. Then a step away from that is more of a browser, a website rendered specifically for your handset. But before that is the mobile marketing. It's really ad placement. It's getting that immediacy around it. You know, I want to make a purchase. I want to make a purchase now. I'm not researching.
Here's a good example building right on that. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to bring up the whole app thing of, you know, producing an app for everything you want to market for is going to be kind of not great for the end user, because once you get hundreds of apps on your phone, it becomes mm-hmm. very hard to use them, and they will get lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why they have browsers, right? So okay. You don't have to have an icon on your phone for every thing
for
you're trying to get
you
to.
Want. Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of building off that as an example of a marketing strategy that developed from mobile marketing going all the way through into an actual application is Papa Murphy's. And they started out with just banner ads in some of the mobile sites that would allow you to click to call or provide you the phone number that you could call ahead to the Papa Murphy's and get your pizza ordered. They moved from that into the mobile web. They actually had a separate website set up on the internet where you could actually log in and place orders through the internet. They create a mobile website that does the same thing. And eventually they found out that everyone was going to the mobile website just to order pizzas. So they developed an iPhone app just for Papa Murphy's. So you could go through and order everything, and then had some more graphics on there to make it look cool. So in that case, what the user wanted every time they went to this location on their mobile device was a very specific thing. So that was a good way for them to set up an application for it.
I think the apps are for high engagement also. I mean, if you're a continuous Papa Murphy's customer, right? If you go there every week, you've got, you know, you want to get your pizza that way. For me, I don't want that many apps. I want to try different places. So
right.
The app bloat we kind of talked about is something to be very aware of. You don't want an app that people use infrequently, because it's not going to get used. It's going to be bloatware. And you really want that high touch, that new engagement. So it depends on your business. I know that Mercedes-Benz has a new finance app.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can pay your lease payment, and it's been very successful. I think they pulled in what $2.5 million last month just
yep.
over it. So it's considered to be a success, but that's another app I've got to make a bill payment, where I've already got my Wells Fargo bill pay online. I've got my US Bank bill pay online. Everybody's got an app. So looking at that user behavior is a very important component.
Right? I think part of that is the repeatability.
Yep.
So, you know, I actually wouldn't mind having an app that I can just touch on the screen once a month and make the payment. Whereas if I'm going, you know, something else where I'm doing a one-off thing, like I'm looking for a new, you know, shirt or something, right? I don't want to have a Kohl's app, a JCPenney's app, you know, nope. all those apps that I'm never going to use again. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all about that repeatability.
You're exactly right. And that's why we always tend to start with things like the mobile web before we move into application development, because you have to determine, you know, what is the consumer base looking for on their mobile application. And if there's something that constantly happens over and over again, it could be a mobile app idea.
So we are seeing a tremendous amount of interest in business apps. And again, that's constantly using them. So if I'm out in the field, let's say I'm an insurance adjuster, having an app on my phone where I can take pictures, log a claim directly from it, those types of things, those high engagement, people using it multiple times per week versus, again, the the infrequent mobile marketing point of view.
Paul, in your research, how accepting are people of mobile marketing compared to other forms of marketing?
They are accepting of it if they've actually requested it. The worst thing you can possibly do in mobile marketing is start pushing information towards consumers if they don't want it. We're productive as it is about our phone and our email. Our email. If you start extending that to your mobile device, which isn't a much more personal device, people will start to be more rejecting of spam.
As far as effectiveness rates go, how is mobile marketing stacking up against other methods?
It has much, much higher ROI, and that's one of the things that we've been highlighting a lot lately. If you look at some of the typical ROI for email marketing campaigns, and you look at the typical ROI for an SMS marketing campaign, SMS usually outperforms it 2 to 3 times higher as far as the conversion rates. So, once again, it's a much more intimate connection between you and the consumer, so you're going to have a higher response rate.
I think the user behavior is very different also. You can sit on an email. Mm-hmm. You don't sit on a text. You don't flag it for follow-up. So the immediacy is a huge differentiator when we are targeting the mobile. We've been talking recently about campaigns. And, the text is a fire and forget. Typically, I'd say a 99%+ get through, but not all of them. So, having a promotion or something where you're sending a text out and having people respond, that works en masse. But we've seen a number of them where you actually make a phone call, as a follow-up to identify that winner. So a lot of different options, but really looking at the behavior, the immediacy of the message. But the nice part from a marketing standpoint is the immediacy. A lot of our email campaigns, maybe it's a personal email that people check once a week. Maybe it's their business email that they check instantly with their phone. It's within a 24-hour period max that you're going to get a response to that text, or else you're not going to get it. So the fall-off rates are very different. When we look at the equation or the wave of a email campaign, you see a spike when the email first goes out, and then it tapers off over about 7 to 14 days. So as an example, if I send out a new JCPenney's ad that says 20% off, you're going to see a spike immediately on that 20% off that'll last about a week. Then it'll taper off in the second week, and then you won't see really any responses after that. The immediacy, I would have to guess or forecast on a text ad, is that you're going to compress that wave considerably. So you're going to see in the first hour the same spike, and then it's going to fall off for the remaining few hours, and you're not going to see anything after that.
Yep, and you pass that 12-hour period, you're just not going to get anything else from the text. Yep. Maybe the one or two people who had their phone off at the time. Yep.
But it's a very interesting environment, and it's very different yet the same as a website and an email package. It's we see more and more usage of the mobile devices, and looking at how your product is created, who's it intended to be targeted at. If you're selling seamless siding, perhaps a mobile campaign isn't the best way to get into it. I mean, you're looking at from an education standpoint, it's a major purchase. If you're looking at selling oil changes, if you're looking at selling tickets to an event, that's a mobile marketing piece where you're going to see great demand straight away.
Yep. Most of the time with any type of mobile campaign, the campaign needs us to kind of center around some type of actionable item that the person can immediately act on. So if you're going to send out an SMS campaign, they need to have some ability to immediately act on that SMS message. If you're going to send out, or if you're going to have a mobile website or a banner ad, there needs to be something they can click on to look at, but there needs to be something that they can actually do to immediately act upon what they're looking at, the content they have. Otherwise, the campaign itself is really, it's not going to be very effective, because people don't go to the mobile web just to browse the web. You go there for a reason.
Is the success of mobile marketing campaigns, is it fair to say that it's somewhat successful because their phones, like you said earlier in the show, are like within arm's length away? It's because that device is in some way an extension of the person?
I think that's a huge part of it.
I mean, they feel that connection, and it's just somehow it's bridging it into their mind that it's more of a trusted source.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of, the trust is a huge piece of it. Your tolerance for spam is far lower. My wife and I went to the Kenny Chesney concert here about 6 months ago. When you first get there, they had a great mobile campaign that said, hey, text your text to this number and we'll put you front row. We got four seats. And if you win, we'll send you a text. We'll bring you up to front row. So I've got nothing to lose on this and much to gain. I'm very excited about it. So I text in. We didn't win. About a week ago, I got a blast about Kenny Chesney's 3D movie that's coming out that I could care less to go see. And it was an irritating text. Mm-hmm. So that those are some things to just case studies to think about.
Mm-hmm. It's actually more than irritating. It's borderline illegal now. We've had a couple big cases recently that have upheld the fact that the TCPA, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, applies to SMS messages. So an SMS message, a text message, is technically a phone call under the TCPA, and you cannot send unsolicited phone calls or text messages from an automated dialer. So if you don't very, very explicitly opt into something, you're setting yourself up for some legal ramifications.
So is there a timeline on this particular? I know I'm certain that I opted in for something to be registered as part of this promotion to get to the front mm-hmm. row. Did I opt in, and is that infinite?
There is no timeline on it. There's some guidelines that are in place. You know, since this is an immediate action, if you're opting in for something, there should be a time frame around it. For instance, let's say you're going to a sporting event, and a similar thing happens where you can text in to win something. That email base, or I'm sorry, that SMS base that you're building up, that should exist for maybe the season. You know, mm-hmm. and once the season's over, you don't want to be spamming people that opted in two seasons ago for something that might be happening.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
They also need to make sure they include some sort of opt-out, right?
Yes.
Because the same thing happened to me, except it was with Domino's Pizza, and honestly, I don't even know how I got on this thing. But all of a sudden, I started receiving SMS messages from them, and at the bottom, they said you could just reply with stop, and sure enough, when I did, I was out of it. I haven't seen one since. But
reply stop to stop is the industry standard. Usually, you put that at the bottom of every SMS message so that the consumer does have a way to opt out. And because of that, because we have the standard out there, some companies are starting to omit that from the text message, and that's actually a policy I disagree with. I think you still need to put that in there until it's become so mainstream that everybody knows it without having to see it.
Yeah. The other piece from a marketing standpoint, just a knowledge standpoint, understanding those federal requirements is complicated. But in addition to that, each carrier's SMS is different, and you need to use different gateways to do that. There's been some products that have been created recently that we leverage that'll standardize that a bit more. But there's a number of complexities that go into this, and regulation. For the most part, email falls under canned spam, which has grown with email. Versus text, which is, it's a telephone. Ma Bell's been around for a long time, and there's a lot of very stringent requirements around it.
Yep, and you can't, one mistake that a lot of companies have been making in the past, and this is where most of these large court cases have come from, is they assumed that the same rules that applied to email applied to text, and it's not. They're really two different mediums, and because text falls under, like I said, the telephone acts, then it really has a lot more strict rules you have to apply by.
And that it's going to become slightly more complex as you look at some of the new mobile devices, such as the Microsoft Kin and some of these other ones, where they're trying to blur your interface. So I'm not going to know if it's an SMS or a Twitter or a Facebook feed. It's all going to be in one stream. I'll maybe have some identifier on it, but that is going to become more and more difficult to understand. Who am I actually replying to? Am I replying to the web? Am I replying to a phone message, or
Are there any other best practices or things to avoid when it comes to mobile marketing that we haven't brought up yet?
Don't spam the client. We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to, if you're working on an SMS campaign, you have to keep in mind that you're really initiating a conversation, and so you have to wait for the other person to respond before you continue. You would hate if we were having a conversation here and I would just dominate one end of the conversation and never let you get a word in edgewise. Well, the same thing would apply if you're working across the mobile device. You know, send something, wait for reply. Send something, wait for reply. And that tends to make the conversations go smoother, and it also allows you, it avoids the, irritating factor of constantly getting texts.
The other piece on the mobile ads, I guess, is things to be very mindful of, is that we know where, from an ad placement, we know where you're at.
Yep.
So your ad dollars are far better utilized. You're not going to be advertising. This is similar to the way Google works, where if I search for something, it knows where I'm at. It's only going to do targeted ads around that. Circle really reduces with the mobile piece. So you can do very targeted mobile marketing that none of your dollars are being wasted.
Yep. Exactly.
And keep them unintrusive.
What would you like to see the future hold for mobile marketing? Are there any barriers out there right now you want lifted?
It would be nice if there were standard technologies across all platforms. You know, right now, if you want to develop a mobile app or a mobile website, it really varies across devices what they can actually display. So it would make it easier if there was more of a standard in place for that.
All right. Chuck, Paul, JR, thanks for joining us today. If anyone out there at home has questions for us, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. We'll catch you next time. I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Sundog the Podcast.